나오잖아. Broadcasting from the beautiful Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
1 Good morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. Here's your host, Patrick Timpone.
Well, it's the Real World of Money with Andrew Goss, and we were just cajoling before hit the sounder that politicians should really kind of just know that the mic's always on, right? It's kind of always on. I even unplug my camera when I'm not on Skype because I think it's always on. Is that possible?
No, that's fair.
It probably, I mean, could it possibly, because you're a geek, Andrew Goss, you're a money guy, but you're also a tech geek. I mean, is it really possible that this little camera thing could be taking pics of us when it's, even when it's not doing anything?
I mean, is your camera wireless? Is it connected to the internet?
No.
Yeah, you're pretty safe.
So I just unplug my little USB thing. What I do.
Yeah.
But I mean, if I didn't unplug that thing, is it possible that somebody could
somebody can go into your computer, turn on your camera, and instruct it to record. They can even write the camera a program.
That's good.
Only come on at a certain time.
It's good to know. Good to know.
It's good.
Really?
The geeks, Internet of Things.
The
everything's
geeks can
connected.
Do that? They can really do that.
Oh, goodness, yes.
Yeah, I guess anything's possible.
If they get it in their mind to do it. See, that's the thing. You know, there's got to be motivation.
Motivation.
There has to be motivation.
Well, I'm feeling pretty good this morning. I woke up and Gary Cohen was not my attorney. And so that was good. And then the yield curve, though, is flattening. So then it was bad. So it went from good to bad. So I thought, I got to understand both, you know.
Gary Cohen? Or you mean Michael?
Michael, I don't know.
Yeah. Cohen. That's all right. There was a Gary, too.
There was a Cohen in there somewhere like that.
Yeah, the Gary Cohen was the globalist Goldman Sachs guy.
Did you see who the judge in this Michael Cohen, Trump's attorney case
Kimma Woods?
Is? Yeah. Do you know about her?
A little bit,
Check her out. She actually married... you're not going to be able, you know, can't even make this up. Yeah. She married George Soros and some chicky bird. And she was a Clinton appointee for attorney general. Yeah. She's got quite a background, Judge Wood, right?
Yes, she does.
So she must have had really fun saying to Mr. Cohen, now give us all your stuff, man.
We're going to look through it.
We're going to look through it.
We'll decide what's relevant and what isn't.
But is the president right, though? Is this all attorney-client privilege thing? I guess she must have had an out there being a judge and everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, forgive me. I mean, the cynicism is dripping here if you haven't gotten it yet.
Mm-hmm, yes.
But, the idea that they're going to raid his personal attorney's office on an unrelated matter.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it is pretty much unbelievable.
Yeah. President said, well, the attorneys around here are just scrambling around like rats leaving the ship here. They're worried.
Yeah, they would be too.
Is this...
It's going to be impossible for him to find a lawyer. Can you imagine?
That's right. Who would want to be his lawyer, man?
Gosh. Well, making him radioactive is part of the plan. You know, this is...
That's what the gods of money and the boys are doing, right?
Yeah,
they're making the president radioactive. That's a good word. Yeah, I like it. Mm-hmm. That means that don't go near him.
Yeah. You know what? That's all politics, Patrick.
Right. It just is, huh?
Yeah, it's just politics, man.
But have you ever seen it this nasty, this dirty, this slimy, this down?
Have I ever seen a president so unwilling to play the game?
Hmm. Well, that's the question, isn't it? Well, maybe JFK.
Yeah, it's about the last one. Yeah.
That didn't end well.
No. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was unwilling to play the game.
Really?
I mean, although he wanted to put a man on the moon and great social programs, he wasn't about to borrow money. Maybe he was. You know what? He can't think for the guy. But in reality, it was the last president that was America first. You know, hey, how about America? He did his bit for the rest of the world. Remember the Peace Corps? Wasn't that?
That was John F. Kennedy. Yeah, it was the Peace Corps. Right?
Yeah. That's how proud and accomplished we are that we're going to send people to... help you. They're going to help.
Then, of course, you have the Medal of Honor to Frank Sinatra, but that was just another thing. Just kidding. If you'd like to be on the show this morning with Andrew Goss, he's a currency historian, and he's a nationally recognized one at that. He has two books, Secret World of Money and Uncle Sam Cooks the Books, and he's working on his third, The Monetary History of the United States. We talk about money on this show. We have been for 10 years on this show, and then before that on KLBJ Radio in the late 90s, as I started to talk to Andrew on a monthly basis, and have learned a lot over the years, like the only thing left to do is turn off the internet and buy gold. I mean, you know, that's essentially my thing. Is that a pretty good idea? What do you think?
Well, if you're going to save money, yeah. Don't forget silver.
Oh, yeah.
Silver. And it's because storing your wealth in dollars, it just gives someone an opportunity to kind of take them away from you. So I was looking at this last night, in fact. Mm-hmm. The dollar, again, in the USDX, right? That's the greenback versus the euro, the yen, and a bunch of other global currencies.
Yeah.
It's down 2.5%. This year.
Already, huh? Yeah, it's at 89.5 this morning.
Yeah.
2.5% this year.
This year. Oh. Yeah, this year, in 2018. So, and, you know, it's ironic that President Trump is saying, hey, look at what China's doing. They're devaluing
their
country.
Yuan, yeah.
Yeah. And we're down 3% against the yuan. So, yeah.
So China says, well, in the first quarter, we did 7.8% growth in the first quarter of 2018. That's pretty good, right? That's pretty good. So Donald Trump's out there saying the yuan is being devalued. The media is saying that that Donald Trump is just tilting at windmills. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Look at the yuan. It's not going down. But I think Mr. Trump could be on to something because they're just printing more yuan. I mean, how else did they get the 7.8% growth, right? They just monetized. Didn't they just print stuff and build factories and put people to work?
And buildings and houses that nobody lives in.
So is it any wonder that yuan is going down against the dollar?
Not to me. They learned the game from us. So, of course, this is the idea.
That's the idea, right?
This is the idea.
This is what you've taught us, right?
Just print more stuff, man. That's what they taught China, you know. Yeah, fix your, print your way out. And, you know, it's interesting that the forefathers, they contemplated this. And, you know, we talked about that ability to emit bills of credit.
Right.
So they didn't want Congress to be able to make or declare or decide what money was. And Congress felt since it didn't have that power, it could delegate it. So that's where the Federal Reserve came from and the other central banks before it. So the Federal Reserve is fully charged with determining the value of the dollar outside of the auspices of Congress. And to me, that kind of bends the Constitution a little bit.
You think?
Yeah, might even break it. I'm not sure.
You think? So at the beginning...
We talked about in the Articles of Confederation.
Articles of Confederation.
Yeah.
They could emit bills of credit.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
The Treasury could.
Yeah, they had the power to emit bills of credit.
So they could print a dollar
on
their dollar machine in the basement and just put it into circulation if they were short dollars, right?
Ironically, the way that many people think it's done today.
Right, and the Articles of Confederation, if I remember my history, it was 1777.
Right.
1777.
Right up until 1785.
A little easy one to remember, yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
1777. Then 10 years later, we had this Constitution that we know of, right?
Yep.
And they took out the admit bills of credit.
On purpose. Yeah.
Who's the guy we love?
Jefferson?
Jefferson. Why did Tom let that happen?
Well, remember that the purists among us, Jefferson,
which was Tom, right? Tom.
Right. They believe that no one should have the power to emit bills of credit except under the laws of fraud.
Ooh.
So if you say, I owe you a dollar, and then you don't have a dollar to pay, that's the old Daniel Drew, he who sells what isn't his'n must pay the price or go to prison. So it's like if you didn't have the dollar to make your bill good, that's what a bill of credit was. Hey, I owe you $100. Here's your bill of credit. Okay. And, you know, I'll send the truck around later with 100 silver dollars or $5, $20 gold pieces. Of course, we didn't have them at the time. Forgive me. The $10 gold piece was the first gold unit of currency.
So that's what Tom said. He said you just kind of you can do your own money thing, but if you commit fraud, you go to the big house.
That's right.
Right. That's pretty much it. Right.
Yeah. And the government was given the power to borrow money, right?
Yeah.
To borrow money is different from coining money or creating money.
Because somebody else is creating it.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah. And it's willing. See, it's willing. So if, and I spoke about this in Secret World of Money. So if you support a particular project or program and you think it's a good thing, then you'll buy the bonds. You'll loan your money for this endeavor.
Like you would loan Elon Musk money if he wants
maybe
to build
an electric car.
Yeah, something like that. Okay.
Yeah, but maybe you wouldn't loan the government money to buy bombs to bomb a foreign country. Maybe you'd say, oh, that's it.
I don't want to do that.
I'm out on the war bond. Yes. Yeah. So the idea of having different bondings for different entities, for different issues, for different things.
So people could choose?
Yes. You choose. You willingly loan your money when you buy a bond or when you buy a note. And what the forefathers intended to keep away from Congress was the power to simply print money or say what money was other than what the Constitution specified. It's a gold or silver coin, period. That's what money is. So they didn't want Congress to have the power to simply print money and declare what money was, because think about what Congress could do with that power. Oh, they would just drive us $20 trillion in debt if you gave them the power to do that.
That would never happen. Oh, whoops. But why wouldn't they say, Andrew, back then, say, okay, you guys could, Treasury, you can print dollars as long as you had gold to back them up. I mean, that would have been a reasonable thing.
Yes.
Right?
Of course.
But
they
didn't do that.
No, they didn't do that. That power was sort of assumed in the equivalency idea. So the idea of a silver certificate or a gold certificate issued by the Treasury being just what you said, a demand note.
Where you could walk into the bank.
Walk in on demand.
Say, give me some silver.
Give me my silver dollar.
No, no.
Give me my gold piece. And with your ability to do that, you had a check or a balance against the power of a government that in order to keep itself in power or in order to, say, enrich its friends, might vote for some particular thing or expenditure that might not be in the best interest of the country.
And then they could just print the money and say, okay, well, this, you know, go bomb somebody or whatever.
Yeah, we're going to bomb somebody. We're going to build a coalition. We're going to insulate our power, whatever. It would just allow for the corruption of the government. So by taking away this power in the mind of Jefferson, the only way money could come into existence was through private contract. If you agree to accept my note for a specific amount of gold or silver coin, that would be minted by the Treasury in a transparent fashion so that everyone would always know what a dollar is. You know what the problem is now that we've let them do this? We have no idea what a dollar is.
Sure,
you
I do.
Don't
I
have
got
a clue.
One downstairs and
no,
it's sitting
don't.
On my counter, and there's a dollar.
I'm sorry.
And that's a dollar.
No, Patrick.
Yes, it is.
And in fact, you know, when they stopped telling us, do you remember that day? I should have marked it on the calendar. When they stopped telling us what M3 was, you remember that?
I mean, it was the late 90s, right?
Something like
that.
We
were on KLBJ in Austin, I believe. That's
I used to print a newsletter then, right? I would write.
And you, M3, tell folks what
print.
M3 was like.
It was the measure of money.
That's the total money supply, wasn't it?
Correct, yeah. Every time I came out with a newsletter, I would have the debt, the national debt, and the money supply.
I remember,
There's your two determining factors for what your money is worth, the money supply.
Hmm.
What is your money worth? But then the Federal Reserve taught me something. Well, I knew it, but they taught everyone at the same time that they reinforced what I already knew, that they have the power to turn any debt instrument into money. So you think about that awesome power. You write, I owe you $1 billion on a paper bag, and the Federal Reserve is authorized to create $1 billion and give it to you and then put the paper bag in their vault.
which is what they do with everything, right? Mortgages.
And that's right.
Car and loans.
That's right.
Everything.
Right? And company, corporate bonds.
Corporate bonds.
And student loans. And so you cannot tell the difference between that money and money that was earned through labor.
It's
homogenized.
It's just all glopped together like sausages. You don't want to see how they're made.
All right. So at least when they told us what M3 was, how much money was in circulation, well, that kind of gave us a barometer or gauge that we could measure and see whether the value of our dollar was likely to increase or to decrease.
Because M3 would go up.
How much money?
Yeah.
How much money is in circulation? And so if you went to grade school, we took away the realization of a dollar in the form of a 1/20th of an ounce of gold or one silver dollar, 0.7734 ounces of pure silver. So by taking away that measure of what a dollar was, then we've lost all sight. We, as the people who use these things, who store these things, who save them, have no way of ever knowing what they are except to look at the total supply and to remember our fractions from grade school. So if you have one unit and the total supply of units is 3 trillion,
whoops,
then you know the value. You know you have 1/3 trillionth
of a thing.
And if all of a sudden the bottom number goes to 6 trillion, then even though the top number stays the same, the value of the unit is half. That's what my math teacher taught me. She was very good about it, too, and it was immutable, one of those immutable facts. No matter how much common core they throw at you, that will never change. If the bottom number doubles, the top number cuts in half, even though it stays the same. So it's in relative value. And my favorite joke about that was the Boss Hog Roscoe thing for the Dukes of Hazzard. You know, it was on network TV every day, once a week rather, at 8 o'clock. And Boss Hog would tell Roscoe the sheriff that he would give him 10% of 10%.
So what's the equation now? What's the fraction look like?
It's the same equation, but Patrick, that was the point. They stopped telling us. Now we have to figure it out ourselves.
We're pretty right? We're close.
No. Remember, I introduced the new monetary figure, and all the classical economists that I wasted all my time learning, Ricardo and all the others, and Adam Smith, and what a waste of time. Because these guys all contemplated silver dollars, a unit of exchange, a unit that you knew what it was. So everything they espoused as the truth suddenly has been altered because after 1980, the Federal Reserve is free to monetize any debt instrument. So that gives us a new monetary figure. Remember, P. P is potential money. So if the Federal Reserve has this unlimited power, every time a crisis comes around, they're going to monetize $4 trillion worth of mortgages. That's what's on their books. And so if their potential is to monetize $4 trillion worth of student loans, they may do that. And every collateralized debt obligation or debt instrument that Wall Street comes up with and creates, the moment it causes a financial panic or a problem, then the Federal Reserve is forced to either monetize it or allow the system to crash.
Which is what happened in
1929.
And also 10 years ago.
In 1929, they allowed the system to crash. Oh. And then in 2008, they said, wait, Ben Bernanke, the academic, studied that.
Yeah, he was a student of the Depression.
That was.
Right?
That's, he wrote his thesis on how to get out. And the powers that be knew that he was the man that they needed at the helm. He was the man because he knew just what to do. Now, an awesome power was revealed to the American people and how they could retain any confidence in their money after this episode, I'm not sure how. I don't understand it. It eludes me.
But the $750 billion TARP thing that covered up the mortgage-backed securities and investing in the banks
had nothing to do with the actions of the Federal Reserve. That was the federal government creating $750 billion worth of bonds.
Bonds. And the
And that was the direct debt of the taxpayer. What the Federal Reserve did shortly thereafter was institute a program where they would buy mortgage-backed securities from the banks at face value.
Right, right. But what I was getting at the 750B or whatever that number was, Andrew, most people believed that the government just had the money, gave it to the, you know, came up with the $750 billion.
Well, some people believe they printed it. There are people who believe they just printed it.
But they didn't.
And it wouldn't be so bad if they had just printed it.
Yeah, but they borrowed it.
But they borrowed it, exactly. They let somebody else print it. That's the Federal Reserve. Well, I said, again, that's a misnomer. Boy, how clever that is. You remember that maneuver, right? Oh, no, Andy's full of poop. Here, look, watch us print this stuff here in the Bureau of Engraving and Printing in a building owned by the government. Oh, I guess Andy's wrong.
That's right. I see him printing right there.
Okay, and these are all government employees. Excuse me, ma'am, do you work for the government? Yes, I do. How? Right? So, oh, Andy doesn't know what he's talking about. And then the pallets of $100 bills are moved down to the shipping area. You go down to the shipping area and say, hey, what are you guys doing with these? Oh, we've sold them all. Who'd you sell them to? Our only customer. Who's your customer? The Federal Reserve. And what did they pay for these $100 bills? 2.5 cents a piece.
Good for them.
Oh, do they pay shipping?
No, we'd send them over.
Post office. We pay shipping.
They were prime, you know.
Oh, man.
2-day delivery.
Goodness gracious. So this is the reality. So now the Federal Reserve has these pallets of $100 bills, or in this day and age, electronic digits, which they simply can use to buy debt instruments within the economy. In that case, it was treasury bonds. They gave the government back its pallet of money and took a bond from the government that has been yielding interest ever since. So previously, having had nothing, now they have this $750 billion in debt instrument that's yielding interest every year, and is never, the principal is never repaid, and their own money in the game is zero. They have no money in the game.
Nice job if you can get it. Wow. But now we see that this whole QE thing, printing money by the central bank or the, is going to now turn the other way, in theory, right? It's going to go to tightening. And by 2019, it's going to be down to nothing. I mean, if you look at the chart, that's the plan.
Yeah, yeah, that's right? The plan.
That's
and
the
who
plan.
Did they put in charge of implementing that plan?
It would be...
It wasn't an academic.
It was...
The academic was put in charge of fixing it according to what the economics lesson taught him to do. The person in charge of all this now is a capital markets man. He was out there actually working, doing the work. So he knows, just as Jamie Dimon knows, that there is no way in hell that the Federal Reserve can unload its balance sheet in that short of a time period without causing a major disruption on the world stage.
You're talking about Mr. Mnuchin?
No. Jerome.
Oh, Jerome Powell, the new Fed dude.
And his new deputy, who's also a market guy.
So all of this idea that we're going to
quit creating money,
and we're going to start selling off our $4.5 trillion.
Yeah.
It's just not true.
Wishful thinking, maybe.
Because you just can't do it.
Well, if we do, let's examine what happens if we do. So the dollar would gain in strength, yes?
Mm-hmm.
And the earnings of companies would plunge.
Why is that, Tonto?
Well, because the dollar's worth more. So even though the potency of the dollar is the same, the earnings on their balance sheet may appear to go down from the year before. Why? Because they're being paid with dollars that are worth more. So from the perspective of of companies, boy, this would be horrible. A strong dollar would be horrible. And even before Mr. Trump's election, you remember how he was ranting a bit about the dollar being too strong?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I hate to think he's going to fix it by weakening the dollar, but I see, based on his borrowing habits And based on his desire to keep things rolling and based on the people that he's appointed, Jerome Powell and his deputy, it seems to me that the Federal Reserve will continue to feed the beast, which requires a cheaper dollar, a dollar that's worth significantly less than the one in place now.
Last month, it wasn't a good month for the Fed. The Treasury borrowed $208.7 billion last month in the hole, right? They were in the hole.
Yeah.
I mean, if you track that out times 12, I did the math, that's not good. That's $2.5 trillion. They're not gonna be in the red 2.5 this year, is he? Is the press? The one we love?
I wish I could say, ooh, I'm sure that he isn't.
Wow, that would
but
be.
But I'm not sure that he is.
That would beat Mr. Obama by, you know, in 8 years, $10 trillion.
Yeah,
be,
but it's all about percentages. See,
be 20 there you
trillion,
go again.
Right? Yeah. There you go again.
There you go again.
There you go again. You're not recognizing the fact that when Mr. Obama doubled the debt, it was only 10.
He went to 10 to 20, right?
Yeah. So now when President Trump doubles the debt, it's 20.
It goes up 20 to 40.
Yeah. So, of course, he's got to do twice as much. Of course, he's got to do twice as much.
What am I
it's
thinking?
All twice as much, Patrick. But unfortunately,
what
that,
am I thinking?
That renders us a dollar that's going to be worth half as much.
That's not possible.
Growth subtracted.
That's
yes,
not
it,
possible.
Yeah, you know what? That's what they said back when.
Half as much. Right. That would mean inflation would be 50%. No, how does that work? No, what am I saying?
If you use my definition of inflation,
yeah,
my definition of inflation is, of course, the increase in that broad money supply.
Right. And so, it's not but Starbucks raising its coffee to
that's
$6.
Their definition of inflation.
Right.
After the money is desiccated and put into circulation. You like that one?
Desiccated. I like it. Desiccated. Ooh. Like desiccated liver.
Yeah, and you guys understand desiccated.
Desiccated liver. We got
after
some.
And all of its life sucked out of it. It's thrown into...
they suck all the life out of the dollar, right?
Well, man.
So I don't... what does it look like? So you're not talking about the dollar index going from 90 to 45 or anything like that.
No,
I mean,
that would
be the end of the world, right?
I see 77. No, I do see 77.
So what does that look like for our listeners around the
country? I see 85, easy.
Who use dollars to do stuff.
What's it just means the dollar's going to be worth a little bit less.
Oh, well.
The dollar's going to be worth a little bit less.
But
and
that's, we're
if
used
you just
to
remember that,
right? That
mantra, that's what you should get used to. So now understanding that it happens... You know, there's a famous analogy, right, about the frog in boiling water. I have no idea that if you drop a frog, right, I've never experimented, so I'm repeating someone else's maybe evidence. Okay, so it was that if you heat up the water to 212 degrees and you drop a frog in it, he's going to jump out.
Oh, yeah, the idea that you put him in. Yeah,
and then you gradually increase the heat.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
You're going to get peed after you, so, you know, be careful there.
I know. So I'm saying I've never personally tried this experiment. I'm merely repeating results that I've heard.
Okay.
Second and maybe third testimony. I haven't witnessed it in any way, but I'll assume that it might be true. If we can do that without Peter getting mad.
That's right. We can do
it.
Okay.
All right, so assuming I should maybe get a French chef in here and ask him. But at any rate, if you turn up the heat in that fashion, pretty soon the water's 212 degrees and there's no reason.
Yeah, a little froggy disc.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so if that's the case in the dollar, of course you're not going to unleash 50% inflation all at once, right? But 6% for 5 years, hey. That's a good third of it, right?
Oh,
there.
I see. Just chunk it off.
Yeah. So we're not going to take the value of the dollar from 89 to 45 because that's like turning the heat up too fast. And that's the whole purpose of the Federal Reserve, remember, is to regulate. That's what they do. That's their job. So they're going to regulate this. Remember the phrase soft landing? You may have heard it in the news as it refers to the economy. A soft landing. That's what they're going to try to do. And the landing point has to be somewhere around half of the current value's dollar. And I know that is that 45 that you're talking about, but it's going to take a long time to get there.
Andrew Goss, Patrick Timpone. It is the Real World Money. If you'd like to join the show, jump on in. 888-663-6386. Email Patrick@oneradionetwork.com. We got a lot to talk about, but get your emails in and and ask whatever you want or comment however you want or whatever you want.
Previously with Dr. Ross Stewart, who just kind of came up with this, telling about how he works with people and their neurotransmitters.
How do we produce sufficient amounts of glutathione in the liver, which of course is a big filter for all the blood, pulling half-spent hormones, waste, dead cells, and other toxins out of the blood. The higher the level of glutathione, the longer a person's going to live and the better their blood is. And I'm glad you're doing a sulfur product. Once you start getting any of these kinds of symptoms, all the way from autism, all the way through Parkinson's, you can't get enough sulfur from eating broccoli and kale and cauliflower and garlic and onions. You can't get enough. You need to supplement it.
Well, the information just keeps on coming with sulfur. The sulfur that we promote is 99.97% pure, no additives, no excipients. Just click an order on the front page of OneRadioNetwork.com.
Yeah. It's a great product. And if you'd like to learn more about sulfur, I'd like to direct you to Mercola.com. It's one of the all-time, I think it's one of the best resources for stuff, because they have articles from all around the world on any subject that you'd possibly want to know about. So if you go to Mercola.com and you put in sulfur or MSM, that's the same thing. It's made from DMSO and hydrogen peroxide, and that's how they make it. And it's got a really love affair with heavy metals, and it's like the number one detoxification kind of thing in the body. Thing's not a very good word, but Stephanie Seneff talks about the whole shikimate pathway. It gets all screwed up with GMOs, and the sulfur helps with that too. Just seems like a real reasonable thing to take in this modern day. And ours is pure. And if you like more than 4 pounds, just email me, patrick@oneradionetwork.com. But go on Mercola and look at some of the sulfur articles, and you'll read two or three of those. You say, I want some. Then you can order. If you want more than 4 pounds, email me. But otherwise, just order away. This EMF protection device called Blue Shield that we promote actually works on the body's cells rather than trying to block the things on the cell phone towers. And they have an interesting thing about that they used in animals in Australia. And check it out. Listen, previously we talked with Brandon Amalani about his Blue Shield product to protect against EMFs in your home.
The more connected we are, the more electromagnetic radiation we're going to have. So years ago, I'd play with Q-Links and just anything I can get my hands on that, whether I felt it working or not, I just wanted some kind of leverage against electromagnetic radiation and those frequencies and how they affect the cellular biology. But then when I met Mark and started really getting deep to his technology and really looking at the microprocessing technology, I've never found any EMF company that would not only to test on not only human blood and urine analysis, but also on animals, which totally weeds out the idea of placebo effect. I mean, the fact that you can plug these devices into a chicken farm, a factory farm, for about 15,000 laying hens, and all of a sudden the mortality rate, which is averages from 60 to 150 deaths per month, goes down to zero. I mean, it's pretty profound that a little device, a little energy device, could actually like create such a harmony and balance within the environment, to where claustrophobic chickens that are crammed in together actually get along better and actually feel better. The biological markers are improved over that 1 year study.
There's quite a bit of science with this Blue Shield product. You can see the ad on the front page. Promo code OneRadio will get you a 10% discount. This works on the cells in the body. Very cool technology. Front page, Blue Shield, OneRadioNetwork.com. More and more, we're told that everything's happening in the gut. Stomach, small intestine, large intestine. Everything happens there, begins in the mouth. We chew good food, get the saliva, and the whole, it's been called the second brain, and the immune system in the gut, allergies, leaky gut. You've heard the whole story. We think two things that are just remarkable for this gut is the aloe. That you can get the fresh frozen aloe from Stockton Aloe One on the front page underneath the slideshow. Check it out. Comes in frozen. You thaw it out. And then also colostrum. It's another one that just, well, you can see the ad there, love your gut. And it really does a wonderful thing about helping to seal up leaky gut stuff and has, well, that's what Mother Nature does in the, you know, at the beginning with the babies and the baby cows, and it works. And the colostrum is on sale this month for the next, what, 10 days or so? 10, 12 days. And you can see the ad right on the top right-hand side of our website. The 1 and 2 kilo bags are on sale. Big savings, the biggest sale of the year. Colostrum from Sithrival and Daniel Vitalis. Okay? Okay.
Know the source. The source. OneRadioNetwork.com. Good morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com.
Well. It is The Real World of Money with Andrew Goss. He has two books, Secret World of Money and Uncle Sam Cooks the Books. He's here every Wednesday. Look in our archives. You'll find all the shows we've done since, 10 years ago. 10 years ago, wow. We started in March 2008 with this particular show. And boy, it was a pretty interesting year to get involved with the Real World of Money show here, Andrew. I mean, 10 years ago today, it was the whole, everything was happening, right? The Lehman thing, and man, it was just blowing up, wasn't it?
It was starting.
It was just blowing up, and what a fun year that was. Man, oh man. So, why does it, I mentioned, I wasn't feeling good because it says the yield curve is collapsing. The yield curve is the difference between
210.
210 30s, yeah. Right? The 2s and 30s?
Well, it's the difference between the price of short-term money.
Short money.
And the price of long-term money.
Which is what today?
Well, it's flat. It's about the same is the point. There's supposed to be a marked difference, so an inflation premium, a difference between 2-year and 10-year, or, 3-month and 30-year. It's supposed to be easy and cheap to borrow money for a short term, but rather dear to borrow it for the long term, because inflation is built.
It would make sense, right? Yeah. If you're going to, but so the flat thing means what? So, what's that telling us, big picture?
Recession dead ahead.
But how can you have a recession if you're just going to keep up printing money? So here's
a great quote.
I got to go back and check something because I got something buzzing. Just go ahead and I'll pick it right up. Okay.
So the idea that computers are a wonderful servant, but a horrible master. That fat finger entry that caused the market to plunge, or the idea that the computer says, because this chart says that you should be selling bonds, well, people do. And the computer says that you should be buying it. People do. And they rely on this math that relies on fixed measures, fixed units. So it's all part of that wave theory, Patrick and audience. The idea that you can calculate the movement of things if you know their quantity and their direction. So, for example, waves, this is where the wave theory came from. If you are dealing with a fixed supply of water in a fixed volume and you set up a wave action, you can predict when the second wave will arrive and when the third wave will arrive and when the fourth wave will arrive with almost regularity. Well, in fact, with absolutely precise regularity, because gravity and nature and the density of water and all these things are all taken into account. But the moment you alter something within that pattern, let's say the volume of water or the size of the tank that the water is contained in or the action that causes the wave, then you're going to have differences. And it's the computer that is relying on these fixed volumes and not ever seeing an increase in the money supply or a decrease in the interest rate. All it sees is the information that's fed into the chart. And as a computer guy told me once, garbage in, garbage out. And with garbage going in, the computer is not getting accurate numbers. It can flash a sell signal or a buy signal at the wrong time, and of course the entire market will follow on. I had written a newsletter piece, I think in the late 90s, about the MMI, Major Market Index, in Chicago, and how they could buy the index and affect the underlying stocks. And it's the very same thing here. The computers will tell the program traders what to do, and it's all based upon what they see on the charts. If that information is erroneous, then their action might be to the detriment of the rest of the system.
And so we were talking plumbing because?
Because the reason why the yield curve is so tight is because the charts are predicting a recession, and the traders are acting accordingly.
So the inmates are running the asylum kind of thing?
The computer. Yeah. It's a wonderful servant.
It's like Hal.
It's a horrible master. Exactly right.
Like Hal in 2001.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Well, not really. I mean, computers are wonderful, but yeah, you probably should put a piece of tape over the camera on yours.
Yeah, I understand. Wow. So.
210 spread, yield spread. Yeah. Yield spread very tight. The difference between short-term money and long-term money is of course, contracting. And so this means what? What does it mean? Well, it depends on how you interpret the data. To me, it's manipulation, plain and simple. If 30-year money was priced according to true market risk, that long-term rate would be 7, 8, maybe 9% now.
Yeah. Patrick Timpone, Andrew Goss, and it's the real world of money. Check this out. So I think this is a testament to what you have talked to us about, the boys, you know, the gods of money, and it's really not about money. It's more about control.
Control.
Control, because I saw an article where a Rockefellers, you know, remember those guys?
I do, vaguely.
Yeah, the Rockefellers, you know, they're a pretty good company, pretty big family. They are going to doing their first auction of all their stuff, most of their stuff, at Christie's. From porcelains to Picasso's, and it's going to be the first time a collection is going to go for $1 billion.
Yeah.
And they're going to give it all to charity.
Yeah.
So you know, because people think, well, these guys are just after the money, you know, and blah, 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 blah. Well, if they were really just about money, they wouldn't be giving away $1 billion to charity, right?
And they have too much stuff.
They would just be stocking it away.
I don't know. Are they going to put that $1 billion in the Rockefeller Foundation?
Well, they don't say that, but or the Clinton Foundation or something like that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see what happens. I know one thing. It's as sure as a testament to the value of collectibles. That's what it really is.
Yeah.
You know, the price that they were. A past generation may have paid for some of these Picassos or things like that. I'll be curious to see if there's any rare gold coins included in this auction. Because, you know, to me, I've had collectibles of every sort. And, boy, trying to sell them, it takes something like a major auction to really get the price that you're supposed to. At least with gold and silver coins, there's daily ready market liquid cash every single day. And in the hunt market, you can sometimes yield more than the current market by being patient and pricing your items according to what they're worth, not what the market wants to pay. So it is, it'll be curious to see what this brings. $1 billion? Yeah, I think that's probably a fair assessment.
Okay, let's talk a little of money, geopolitics, oil, gas, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. There's people conjecturing that the deep state, the boys, the gods of money, the military-industrial complex, thank you very much, Ike, have really taken control of that little room where they go in with the president and say, Mr. President, here's what I think we should do. Because it seems like the Russian, Russia, Syria, Iran, North Korea thing, they've got the president on a warpath, right? And and now word's out this morning that they're thinking of just cutting off Russia's SWIFT.
Yeah.
Thing. So what's that mean?
That's
a big deal, right?
Yeah.
That's a financial shot across the bow.
Sure is. Yeah. It'd be like telling you you can't use your debit card anymore. Right. Well, so
Swift is...
Russia will have to revert to rubles and gold. And thank goodness they've been adding to their gold pile. So I imagine you'll see them weather this as they have every other sanction that's been put upon them.
So SWIFT is the thing that the dollar people control.
Have set up. Allow for the transfer of dollars between banks.
Around the world.
Around the world, yeah.
So if you want to buy...
Worldwide.
If you want to buy some Russian...
Wheat.
Oil.
No, they don't have any wheat.
They don't have any wheat.
They
don't want our GMO wheat, I know. So if you buy Russian oil, you would use... If they want rubles instead of dollars, would you use SWIFT for that too?
If who wants rubles? The Russians?
If the Putin would want rubles. Why would he do that, right?
I'm trying to think of a reason. But let's say we constrain him to the use of rubles.
Okay.
But on the worldwide market, people will not take rubles. They're not going to quote you a ruble price for their particular commodity or asset or stock. So necessarily, he's going to have to set up a...
But they've been trying to do this anyway. I mean, it's been in the works for a long time.
That's right.
Oh, Vlad, he's not... You know, he just didn't pull out the turnip truck.
That's right.
He knew this was coming.
Oh, yeah.
He's got to
know. If you look at what the Russians have been doing economically, right? So they've been paying off their sovereign debt, right? And stockpiling
gold. China, too, right?
So this is sort of their defense, if you will, against this sort of action. And this is the sort of action that is the most drastic. So it's like a threatened action that keeps people in line, but apparently it's not going to work, or it may work this time. They shut them off, and Vlad goes, "Okay, what do you need?" But then I'm sure as soon as it's back on, he'll be paying down his national debt and stockpiling his gold until he can literally tell them, "Go ahead, shut me off.
Pound
I
sand.
Don't care." Yeah.
Do we know how much? How much debt Russia has?
No.
We don't know.
No.
It's not published, right? They don't put that out on TV.
It's not very transparent.
And China really doesn't have it because they print their own, right?
Well, they still have debt. It's like, don't make a mistake that both sides of the balance sheet must be represented. So if they create a debt instrument to create money, there's still a debt. So that's the basis of their money is still a debt instrument. Just because they're the issuing authority and they own the right to issue those debt instruments doesn't make it any more valuable. It's still just IOUs when you get right down to
Years ago, F. William Engdahl, one of our sources, pretty cool guy, and now Eric Margolis, who we had on, who was a war correspondent for years, and we had him on the show a couple weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, suggested that Syria was about, the big part of it was this pipeline, the competing pipelines, right? Russia gas wanting to go into the EU, and then the European pipeline thing. And
look at the...
That's probably a big part of it, huh?
Look at the map. Look at the pipeline map.
Yeah, boy.
And tell me. May draw your own conclusion as they...
It's funny, you don't hear that anywhere on any media. I mean, it's funny you don't hear that.
No, it's funny you don't hear that. But the most suspicious thing to me, and I am by no means an expert, don't know anything about it, don't know what's going on inside or outside the borders of Syria there as it relates to this pipeline. But here's what I do know, that it was about a week ago. It was prior to the previous show. Weren't we talking about President Trump announces he's going to withdraw American troops from Syria?
He said it in a tweet, and he said it publicly as well in one of those sit-down things when somebody was sitting next to him. Right
now, I'm Assad, right? I'm the leader of Syria, and America's my enemy, and they've been financing and really creating this disturbance. And so now America just announced that they're going to move their troops out of my country.
Right.
I'm going to help them pack. I'm like, here, hey, you forgot your canteen? Anything else here? This is your stuff. Let me get a truck for you and drive you to the airport. But that's not what this president did. In fact, I don't know. It just seems like the most stupid thing that a leader in his position could do. turn around and provoke you to stay. No, don't leave. Here, look, here's some gas on my people.
There's so many
that different just doesn't make sense to me.
Stories about this.
I don't. Hey, maybe he's a monster.
I don't know what the truth
people
is.
People hate him, but I, you know, hey, whatever. It seems like very. What's counterintuitive? Is that the word? I think
it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't seem like what I would do, or a rational person. Absent me. You take a rational person, even an irrational person, my goodness, it's almost like, what? Don't know, don't leave. We're not done with you yet.
Where's That's Walter insane. Cronkite when we need him? Because we don't know the truth over there. I mean, you have all these, we put a little video on with Robert Fisk, who's over there. He said there was no chlorine attack. You have experts over there saying, yeah, this was a bad thing, but then we don't know who did it, and then you have people. So you don't know what the truth
you
is.
You don't know what
you
the truth
is. You just have no idea what the
but
truth
you,
is.
But you can stand back without knowing anything about the gassing and any of that and ask yourself, well, what's the big deal with Syria? What is the
big deal? What is it? Why are they so interested in Syria?
What the hell is
Why are they so interested? Yeah. And I guess people are saying it's that warm water port too that the president likes, and I mean
I
Putin
li-
the Putin likes, you know, that he needs that. And
I'm sure I don't know. I'm sure
of,
I don't know either.
Man.
But here's what I do know.
I don't know either.
Here's what I do know: that if you look at the Fed's balance sheet and you look at the money,
you're not going back to the
I'm
money
going
already,
back
are you?
To the money, man.
What a because, guy you are, man.
Because that's what I know.
Yeah.
So. Their argument that they are reducing their balance sheet, okay? So you understand how that works. You have one side of the scale, you have the other side of the scale. So if you have a debt instrument in the vault and you're extinguishing that debt instrument, then you must necessarily extinguish the money that was used to pay it. So in other words, if the Fed is taking $1 billion worth of bonds off of its balance sheet, it has to destroy the money that was paid to it to put it on the balance sheet or take it off the balance sheet, forgive me. So if you look at the Fed's numbers, you'll see, oh, we reduced from a year ago today the Reserve Bank credit, the securities held outright, by $76 billion.
In just one, that's not a lot.
In a year. Well, $51 billion of it was federal debt that was allowed to mature. So the Federal Reserve had a bunch of short 6 month bonds, bills, or notes that matured. And because we know, as we've discussed on previous shows, that $12 trillion of the $20 trillion that we owe is due and payable in the 5 years from Donald Trump's election.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially in his first term. So the government has been taking our tax money and paying off the bills, bonds, and notes that are maturing. And the Federal Reserve has historically, I say historically because it's only since 2008, right? They've reinvested that money. So they take that money that the government gives to them, and let's say they loan it right back to them in the form of buying another bond. So they have to report that to us in their securities held outright on the H-4-1 release, which is like the third, fourth line. So securities held outright is down. U.S. Treasury securities is down. Bills, bonds, and notes is where it all came from. $57 billion was paid off in the last year. And if you look at the mortgage-backed securities, $16 billion of those came due. And they didn't reinvest the money. And $8 billion worth of federal agency debt, that's Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, etc., that came due. And again, they didn't buy more. So what did they do with the money? Did they destroy it? Well, currency in circulation increased by $100 billion. Currency in circulation increased by $100 billion.
Over what period?
Over the same period.
Okay.
So... They paid it off on one hand and charged it on the other hand. So the balance sheet still balances, but the total of these notes that they hold has fallen, but the total of paper money that they put into circulation has increased. And in fact, there's a net gain. So it's plus, on the plus side, on the asset side, 149, excuse me, liability side, 149 billion, the liability side, has increased by. So in terms of difference, there isn't any. You're taking it out of one pocket and putting it in another. The Fed is not shrinking its balance sheet. It's merely reducing the liability side, increasing the liability side and reducing the asset side.
You're probably the 0.1% of the people that are actually look at this.
Well,
so
yeah.
So what do
I
they
know.
Care, right?
Yeah, you're right. Very few people.
Yeah, what do they care? You know, they just do it. Wow.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're absolutely
right. So what does that tell us, big picture?
That they're not. They're not reducing the supply of money in circulation.
What does that mean for us dollar users out here listening?
That there's no chance we're going to have a deflationary depression, as many are once again predicting.
I know.
You know, it's
there,
like,
man.
Here we're out there. Oh, gosh, it's a deflationary depression. Help us. Is that Hegelian dialectic? What should we do? What do we need? We need some inflation. We just need some inflation. If you could only find a way, if only we knew how to create it. It's insane. It is insane. But there are people that are predicting a deflationary depression.
And that would only happen if everybody who creates money for a living on a computer quits doing it.
Yeah.
And if that happens, then you would have a deflationary depression.
Well, the only thing that'd be worth anything.
Why would they do that, whoever they are?
Where's
would they
the
do
profit
that?
There?
Yeah, where's the profit there?
Oh, yeah.
Let's just make everybody run the streets naked and, you know, just, you know.
Liquidity.
Yeah.
No liquidity. As I study monetary history.
1929, right?
Yeah. As I study monetary history, I find instance after instance where people were pushed into bankruptcy because they had no specie. And I always thought that word was funny. And early on, I figured out that it means gold and silver coins.
Oh, they didn't have
any
specie.
That's the specie.
You gotta have specie.
They didn't have any specie. What they had was lots of land, lots of real property, maybe some slaves, maybe some means of manufacture. But when it came to specie, gold and silver coin on hand, they had none. So when there's a general downturn in business, they had no ability to pay their debts. And this is sort of why I call gold and silver coins wealth insurance. I'm not saying sell everything you own and buy gold coins. But if you're going to put money away, if you're going to store money for a rainy day, you better make sure it's worth something when it starts raining. And if you're storing...
What a concept.
Yeah.
You want to make sure it's raining.
If you're storing your wealth in Federal Reserve notes, you know, the whole thing we say to China, oh, we can't take your yuan in payment of debt or even an IOU of yuan because we don't know what a yuan is. And you might just create a trillion of them and pay us off with yuan that's worthless. So we can't take it.
How would you separate yourself as a gold and silver merchant of coins, real American money for many years?
Yep.
How would you separate yourself, Andrew Goss, from the late night TV dudes or the people on radio that say you should buy gold and silver now because, you know, we're going to be crashing and burning any day now? And I hear them all the time.
I'm in a different business.
I hear them all the time. I'm like,
I don't know what business they're
in. KLBJ radio. I hear it. It's crazy.
I'm in the business of rare American gold and silver coins. Coins that have historical significance, what we call numismatic coins, where their value is not so much based on the gold or silver that they contain, but the number that were issued, the condition that it's in, and so forth.
So most of the collapsitarians, as we call them, saying the world's going to end tomorrow, they're selling more bullion stuff, like Krugerrands and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, gold and silver bars.
Bars and bricks.
Which is what people bought in the 1930s.
Sure.
Or in the 20s, rather. You know, that's how they protected themselves. They stored up gold and silver, blocks, bricks, bars, anything that they could get their hands on that was made of gold or silver was stored. But then President Roosevelt issued an executive order in 1933 that said, you're not allowed to own that anymore.
Good for him.
If you have gold, you have to turn it in, and we'll give you more Federal Reserve notes for them. oh my goodness, is anything exempt? Well, yes, coins of rare and unusual collector value.
And you've often said the reason that is because they all have these coin collections.
Everybody,
like,
yeah.
Like the Rockefellers.
No, yeah, they have them, but you won't see those in this auction. That's.
They're not selling those.
Right? And, you know, the number every day we hear about a new collection starting. Last week I heard about one, Utah.
Yeah.
Multi-billionaire land developer has decided that he wants the Eliasberg thing, which was, you take out your red book, you remember that red book?
I do. Mm-hmm.
Start at the beginning, and you get every single coin until you get to the end, and then you have a collection.
Whoa.
Of every single American coin available. So, it doesn't take too many of those guys to make this, you know, when he gets to the 1870 $3 gold piece, how's he going to fill that, the 70S? When he gets to the 1875, where there was only 25 made. And you know what? 11 of my clients will be very happy that day. Because no doubt, in this process, he's going to drive up the price of these otherwise unavailable rare coins. So that supply and demand equation is what draws me to this market. Along with, I just love the historical significance of owning something that was a part of American monetary history. That, to me, is the best thing of all. And when I look at that 144-piece silver commemorative set that we, from 1892 right up until 1954, and then starting again in 1982, but we issued these half dollars to commemorate great events in American history. So we have one of the biggest sellers right now is the Lexington and Concord. Now, if you may recall, the bridge at the Battle at Concord was all about the King's men marching up to the powder magazine,
yeah, yeah.
Right, to take the weapons. And the powder magazine is on the back of the coin. And on the front of the coin is the American Minuteman standing there with his rifle ready to defend his country.
Wow.
Struck in 1925, very limited quantities, very popular coin. You end it with the only black Americans on a U.S. coin for like 200 years. That was Booker T. Washington and Washington Carver. These two gentlemen had the distinction of being put on an American half dollar in 1946 when we were allegedly, this was the most racist place in the world, but yet we chose to celebrate our greatest scientists on a coin, and that was Booker T. Washington and Washington Carver, and guess what? No one else. So, there are some great coins in that series from 1892 to 1954. They're all half dollars, and they're not crazy money. Even though you have coins with mintages of a couple of thousand, you only made 2,000 coins. You could still buy them for a reasonable price. And I mean reasonable, like they're in reach of 70 to 80% of America. Now, will it stay that way? No. We're already having difficulty finding specific issues. And what do we do if we can't find a 1939 Oregon Trail that we need? There was a great coin struck in 1939 to commemorate the Oregon Trail, but they only made 2,000. We raise the bid. We pay more. And when we pay more, everybody else has to pay more. And so this is how prices rise. Even if gold and silver aren't rising, it doesn't have any reference at all. And you know how many of each were made. You complete the set. And like a good game of Monopoly, a good set is worth more than the sum of its parts. So it's fun. It takes a lifetime, maybe. But it's a definite worthwhile thing to do.
And you told us, too, that if your goal would be to work on passing along something to your family.
Yes.
It's a pretty cool thing, too.
Oh, yes.
Because
yeah.
of the way you can do it.
Well, yeah. Hmm. I mean, not that that's going to matter much, but the harsh reality is that, A $20 gold piece is legal tender, $20. And B, if you hand it to your kids, you just handed them $20. And so, I mean, yeah, there are benefits. It's a wonderful intergenerational wealth transfer tool, but learning about American history. America's history is told through its coins, from the devaluation of the dollar and the removal of silver in 1964 to the recall of gold in 1933 to the Revolutionary War and the first continental dollar. There are, my favorite I've mentioned many times, the Fugio cent, proposed by Ben Franklin, has the time on the sundial on the front, and mind your business, which is what he proposed as the national motto. Mind your business.
That's great.
It's a double meaning, and it's great.
Well, it adds a whole new dimension to the idea of follow the money, and it really is true, though. I mean, if you think about it, in the history of this country, and it's always been about all that, right? All the money and who's controlling it and who's fighting for it, and Abraham Lincoln printing his own money and the whole thing.
Man. Yeah, yeah. And I know the first $10 gold piece from 1795 is one of my favorite coins. And when I first started in this business, I remember buying two of them at one auction in New York City. I paid $12,000 for one and $15,000 for the other. And my stomach was churning the whole time.
It's like, I can't believe I'm paying this money.
Yeah, that's right. And then when I got them back to the office, you know, we didn't have grading services then. Remember, NGC didn't even start until 1987. And so, you know, that was my challenge then, convincing people these things were real. But I saw a coin of similar quality to the $15,000 coin sell for $85,000.
Wow.
I'm not that old. I'm not that old. I'm not so old that it's an unreasonable amount of time. I mean, I get it. That's not Amazon stock, or it's not some other piece of paper that may have appreciated 10,000% in the same period. But that's good, solid growth for a 30-year track record, and that's about when it was. So it is, it's a wonderful long-term asset, but if you're looking for get-rich-quick, go somewhere else, because this is like watching the grass grow. It's slow and steady, and it's money in your possession as opposed to someone else's possession. There's no counterparty risk. If somebody goes out of business, it doesn't affect you. They don't take your money with them. So, if you haven't considered rare coins as part of your investment portfolio, perhaps you should.
Well, do you actually have, I won't even go there now because I don't want to do that.